welcome an old friend to the show today, Drew Williams. I've known Drew for good grief over a decade now, and I would never think that we would ever be in the same space. Drew is one of those guys that has been there and done that and just about anything, particularly in cybersecurity. Not only is he a cybersecurity consulting expert, he's also a Navy veteran and now also a Capgemini alum. Drew, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, but it's good to see you again.
It was really good to reconnect, especially in relation to some of the things that you've held near and dear to your heart. And I can't believe that we've never spoke, the three of us together, especially with what you and Eric have done and seen, especially right now, the ever-evolving role of a CISO and the cybersecurity consultant. I thought maybe we can delve into that. It's been a hot topic as of late.
Oh, absolutely. It is. And not going away. It's just getting more and more vital. But at the same time, I find it ironic. It's not only getting more vital, it's getting more generic. The market is so glut with so many people with certs and 5-minute fast break titles that think they can solve the world's problems. And it's not going to be that easy.
Eric, you had something to say on that one.
Yeah, I totally agree. We talked about some of the previous podcasts about having experiences and just being able to take the value from those and being able to plug them into any type of scenario and learning from those. And I think a lot of times if you can fail small and learn from it, you know, you learn from failing small and you hope that there's not some major repercussions from that. And then you can take that into other experiences and it really means a lot. And so being able to have experiences, very good. And you only get that by starting out somewhere. You know, hopefully we can get some of the people listening to hear some of our experiences, maybe learn from some of the things that they hear from us, but also be able to apply those things in their everyday lives. That's the goal.
If I may there, Maurice, to comment on that and just piggyback, I mean, Eric's right. What is the old adage that says that an intelligent person learns from the mistakes, a wise person learns from the mistakes of other people? And unfortunately, sometimes even the wise person gets burned. I've gone through 6 ransomware attacks. They were all for one MSP. And it's because their CEO and their leadership just refused to do what was necessary to reduce risk for their clients. They were much more interested in the revenue stream. And that ended up being State Department reviewed, FBI reviewed, loss of $7 million in Bitcoin and $75 million in investment capital because they didn't want to take the time to learn what it takes to avoid those problems after having experienced them vicariously through other clients. So I'm with you 100%. I would much rather, first of all, not have the experience of failure, but also if it is going to be a failure, I'd rather be a small one than something catastrophic. But it happens, right? I mean, I just posted something online saying, you know, I'm happy to wear the kick me sign as long as we understand what the consequences on both sides of the foot are. And that's what we do, right? As CISOs and cybersecurity practitioners, we have to take the kick me sign and wear it. And sometimes, unfortunately, because of the lack of experience with understanding risk and what it takes to alleviate and avoid those risks, and other folks within the organization who may not understand our space at all, don't know that that's what our role is and that you should be grateful we have that. You know, we had the guy that was at SolarWinds was one of the guys that worked on my SWAT team back when we were at Symantec. He was an account manager and he came up the ranks and he tried to make the right decisions. But again, leadership just didn't pay attention and it ended up costing a lot of folks a lot of stress. So it happens.
Yeah. So Drew, those are some very sought after experience qualifications. When I know when looking at job requisitions and talking to other people, a lot of companies want to find people who have gone through those type of scenarios, because then they'll be able to help them be able to prepare for those scenarios, but also know how to react if they do indeed have those. Another part is I'd like to ask you, how would you talk to some of the maybe CEOs or other personnel that you mentioned earlier, like if you're in a different scenario and learning what you learned before, what would you do or say to try to convince them based on your prior experience that this is very important?
That's a tough one, because here's how it works. It worked for me over the last umpty squat years. In our space, and Eric, I'd love to hear your perspective on this as well. We don't get called up to the big desk unless the group is getting hacked, audited, somebody's buying or selling part of the company or all the company, or there's a question about whether or not they're in compliance with some rule set so that they don't get fined. For me, and when I experienced those nasty malware situations, and it wasn't just there. I mean, shoot, when I was working with, let's just say the largest franchisor in the world, we had two WannaCry incidents. One took out most of Europe's restaurant chain for a couple of days. And I had a half dozen attorneys talking while I was at RSA. But what I tell them is you've got to start with the awareness of what are the risks associated with your organization and your infrastructure. What sector are you in? What's likely going to hit versus what's possible versus what's always going to be there. And then your tolerance can be evaluated based on that. And then you address that level of tolerance. And as a professional, as an expert in our field, I think our job is to ensure they understand what the consequences are of being that tolerant or not being that tolerant, and what they need to do to shore up the processes first, and then making sure everybody in the organization is aware of what those processes are, why they're essential, and what they do to address risk, and then deploy controls on top of that. So many vendors out there are about selling yet another tool. That's great. That's why we have more than 1,400 cybersecurity vendors out in the industry. We don't need 1,400 cybersecurity vendors. What we do need are really good, well-defined processes. And if you can come out with a NIST CSF cybersecurity framework or an ISO 27K framework that can pretty much provide the fundamentals, which, by the way, came from other frameworks, Common Criteria, HIPAA, they all came from something else, from us writing them in the first place. You're basically taking that sword to the Gordian knot and just chopping the daylights out of it and saying, okay, I think we've got this figured out, but we never have it licked because they're always a little bit ahead of us. Remember the old saying, bad guys only got to be right once. We've got to be right 100% of the time, and we never will be. So I would advise leadership just like that.
Yeah, definitely. So a lot of that talks into governance, risk, and compliance. And I know a lot of times when people see GRC, they're like, oh boy, that's kind of boring. Why do you care about that? It's about real risk. However, what you said almost meshes in with that. If you're really doing governance, risk, and compliance correctly, you're really getting a lot of those impact statements from the business people. So from the CEO, from maybe the board of directors, from the investors, from all of the C-suite. So you're understanding, okay, in our business, here's what's important. If this happens, here's the impact. Here's how much it's going to cost us in dollars. Here's how much in reputation. Here's how much it's going to hurt maybe our partners or our customers or our employees. And so really quantifying that and putting it into a risk register sounds like it's pretty important, but it almost sounds like people aren't really using GRC correctly. They're just using it to get through audits. Is that a fair statement?
It is a fair statement. And here's the thing. I just finished a SOC 2 pre-audit review with a large healthcare organization on the West Coast. They were terrified that, oh, we're going to get audits, it's going to cost us. And as you know, from doing a SOC 2, SOC 2 background, those things take anywhere between 9 and 24 months to complete effectively. And this was an enterprise, mid-sized enterprise. We were able to work with them and help them set up what the expectations needed to be, what the review based on those GRC guidelines. It took, I think, maybe a month of time and effort on our part to author and prepare them. And then 3 days for a reviewer to come in and look at it and say, okay, this is where your exceptions are. The problem with GRC is, to your point, it's not sexy. It's not black hat stuff. It's not guys running around like James Bond. If you look at what's most important about that three-letter situation, it's the R in the middle. That's where you're really looking. And it's about risk. For a period when I was with Lockheed Martin, I traveled around with the CSO online group and give tabletop lectures with the other CISOs from around the country at these really nice dinners. And one of the things that I always start out with, and it usually got the younger CISOs' hair up on the edge, is I'd say, compliance never equals security. What? Blah, 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 blah. And their heads explode. But it's a fact. But then they don't listen to the other half of that sentence, which is, but it's the front door into a more secure environment. And that's the part that's missing. The auditors are auditors. They're always going to be auditors. Security guys are security guys. They're always going to be looking over the shoulder, thinking, what else can I get and deploy and tool around with? But if you can understand that compliance is the front door to understanding what your landscape, where your threshold is, and where the gaps are, now you can go forward and say, yeah, compliance then becomes a byproduct of just making good decisions to reduce risk. And that's how you need to manage your GRC situation. At least that's been my experience.
That's a good point. So I think it also kind of keeps you honest, and it also keeps you from forgetting things. So a lot of times you'll see something in a compliance framework and you'll say, oh, okay, that's a good reminder that maybe we should be increasing the level of this, or to our customers, or even in government, our agency partner customers, that something is even more important for them. And so really showing how you're meeting that control and maybe surpassing it a little bit that you would in a framework, but yet to their business type, that it's something very important for a very specific reason. So I think that it's kind of that front door, and it kind of keeps you honest. It makes sure that you are covering things that you might have normally missed.
True, and I agree with all of that, with one caveat. If you are going into an organization either to replace a former information security officer or they've never had one, you're going to spend a little bit of your time just building your own credibility that they, yeah, you got the job. Yeah, you work in the department. Yeah, you might be a senior player or a mid-level senior player. We still have to trust you. Well, the way my experience has been is if you demonstrate stewardship to say, I understand the culture in your business, which we call tribal culture, but we've got to make slight adjustments, just slight adjustments so that we collectively can move more assertively down the road that our business objectives require. And that isn't, hey, I'm going to come in with two guns drawn. I'm going to say, you got to be a this certified guy and you got to have an OPSEC place here and you got to have a FISMA certification here and blah, blah, blah. It's about understanding the landscape within the operation first, listening to what they're saying and what they're not saying, and then what does the market expect? And then you can start building the appropriate risk register framework, whatever, and then helping them understand how they need to adopt it. Again, it comes back to awareness and then process, clearly defined process, repeatable process, manageable process, scalable process, and then deploying the upgrades, the updated controls, the tweaks and whatever. If you don't follow that very repetitive storyline, you start getting into trouble. And then that trouble can escalate into some crazy, crazy stuff. One of the ransomware attacks that I had to deal with was on Christmas Eve a few years ago. I got a call from the Lieutenant Governor of California, not his aide, the Lieutenant Governor of California at my home on my phone. I'm like getting ready to hang out with the grandkids for Christmas Eve. I'm like, who is this again? And then one of my architects who was down in California space there, she said, yeah, we just got hit with a ransomware attack and everything's offline. That was 800 clients of ours. And unfortunately, one of them was a Children's Cancer Institute center in Colorado, and a child lost his life because they couldn't get access to the records. So this stuff is legitimately bad news. And again, follow process, keep your people aware. Then all of a sudden doors open and you can say, all right, I think we can manage this now. It's no different than combat, right? Or military. I mean, I'm being a military guy. We drill in the Navy on ships. You've got two groups of people. You've got people that float the ship and people that fight the ship. Sometimes they interact, but a lot of times they are not. They are two different groups of people doing two different groups of things. And you've got to be able to balance first, does the ship float before I even try to fight it? And then we layer on top of that. Now, what are our controls and processes for how we approach and engage in an adversary? And that's exactly what we have to do in cybersecurity.
Those are some great examples. But one thing to interject too is you talked about the impact. And certainly, I mean, some of those things where it could be due to loss of life or severe harm to an individual, complete destruction of a business, and also these warfighter systems. And we understand like high baseline systems in the NIST framework and other frameworks and how crucial information security is in critical infrastructure. And we're kind of seeing a lot of those things today where we're looking at and we're saying, are these controls good enough today? Are we going to see possibly maybe more attacks, especially accelerated with things like AI? Like you said, the adversaries have access to a lot of these tools. So are we ready? So I know that's a lot of things that I kind of threw out at you. I mean, really, your experience with warfighter systems, I think that shows the criticality of getting information systems right and some of the extra measures that you have to do for making sure things are working correctly, because if not, it could be very hazardous.
This has been fantastic to hear some of the insights that both of you have brought. I wanted to delve into what a warfighter system is. Now, again, coming from a novice point of view, just in layman's terms, what are the warfighter systems and how are they protecting us?
Yeah, definitely. So in a quick summary, just any of the information systems that it takes to support the warfighter efforts, whether they're out on the battlefield or other parts. I had a great opportunity three different times to go to Fort Knox in Kentucky and work with Human Resources Command and work on some of their supporting systems, especially notification systems. That's all I can say about it, even 12 years later. However, I got to learn a lot of things. And again, this was in NIST, and it was right before FedRAMP came out. And that was the first customer who asked to use our cloud service. And that's when FedRAMP was required, was in 2012. And so I looked at that and I thought, oh, okay, I've built system security plans before. So I understood it and I engaged in that. when I was at a large computer company here in town, I was able to get the first cloud system for DoD, DHS type of an authorization. And so it was meant for that customer who was a war fighter support system. And that's what they were using our on-premise system for. I helped them rebuild the on-premise system. It was for static application security testing. So it was testing security defects in the code to make sure there weren't defects that were exploitable so that you couldn't do things like SQL injection or cross-site scripting, or those are
You were
just
OWASPing the system.
definitely, definitely. And so that's what the capability was to be able to read the code and then understand where there were problems and then give recommendations. And then it was like a rinse and repeat to make sure that you could get a clean version, and then you could deploy that into your production system. But really, the warfighter, understanding the warfighter system, I guess information systems that support warfighters, was very eye-opening, because that's when you're dealing with a high impact system, because there could be loss of life if something goes wrong. And so that really makes you think, when you're working on these systems, this is super important. What I'm doing, every piece of attention that I'm giving this system could help save someone's life. I mean, that sounds kind of crazy when you
No, it
say it,
doesn't. No.
but in the inverse of that, if you do it wrong, it could lead in disaster. And that's more of how you think about it. So really, these systems are very critical. They're on networks that I've never heard of before. I heard some of the generic ones, and it's like, oh yeah, most people have heard of those. And then some I've never even heard of. Some of these ones that we were working at a data center that was a couple hours out of DC to the west of DC. And there were some of these systems that I had never even heard of. And it was pretty amazing. And again, that's all I can talk about it. But they do some pretty incredible things. And so a lot of these people working on these systems, they keep our critical infrastructure working, and they also keep our warfighter soldiers safe to make sure that everything they do with IT systems, because just think about all the IT systems that they use.
Yeah,
They use all of these things, and it's got to work right, or else there's big problems.
agreed. And those portable systems are their uptime is 100%. And folks that are listening, I'm sure, are very familiar with the CIA triad: confidentiality, integrity, and availability. In IT security, it's that order of operation that you have to look at from a priority: confidentiality first, availability last. In a warfighting situation, manufacturing, just-in-time development, it's backwards. It's availability always, integrity must have. Confidentiality, probably, but we just got to make sure that it's up and running. And sometimes that also can become a very cultural and difficult shift to take in. But no, I appreciate that comment on the warfighting situation. This concept of cybersecurity management, it's still very somewhat elusive. It just kind of bounces around depending upon what the trouble is. And if you can wear the kick me sign well and know how to dance, when you go in and sit down with a leader, they're either going to be like, this guy is off his mind, out of his mind, or they're gonna be like, wow, this is really beyond what I expected. What else can we do? What else do you need? Really depends on the appetite of the leadership, in my experience.
What are some of the things that we should be tracking that are not necessarily loss of life? It just in general, what should we as CISOs be expounding to the people that we're trying to protect, especially when we're looked as the no people in the organization?
Correct. And so here's the thing I take, and Eric, make me honest here. There's a lot of hype. Obviously, again, I go back to RSA, which is just a big hype party now, and it's a great place to go have dinner and hang out with your friends and pick up, free t-shirts, but there's just a lot of hype. And I think if you cut through and go back to the fundamentals, this is one of those Occam's razor situations where look at the most obvious situation and address it first. I do that constantly. Wait a minute. Big convoluted, oh, it's got to be this. And then wait, and of course, the reality sandwich is my wife, which is common for most folks. She'll come in and say, hold on a second. How about if you just turn the switch off and try it again? Boom. And then all of a sudden, common sense prevails and says, wait, the most likely situation is the one we need to address first. So that's what I would advise. And that's what I counsel my clients and certainly leadership and so on. And this is something that the guy I just left, the organization I just left, he just couldn't get it in his head. Do the obvious, do the basic fundamental obvious things first, and you will find success. Now, there may be additional challenges that come along, and an occasional anomalous situation will surface. You have to address it. Now, here's the irony of it. Today, we're talking about, well, let's go back 5 years. I look at a couple of companies, really fantastic organization a few years ago called Cyber Reason, which came out with a really strong Bayesian math algorithm that created some super machine learning tools. Brilliant, incredibly complex, anomaly-oriented technology. Well, now here we are today talking about AI like, you know, it's bacon and eggs. It's moving so quickly, so rapidly. If you think about it, this thing in my hand, right, this Galaxy phone has a 16 megapixel camera and a 4K movie camera. It's a phone, for Pete's sake. And, you know, think about that 20 years ago. I mean, 20 years ago when I was still playing with, you know, flip phones, thinking I was Captain Kirk, no idea we were going to use these things for cameras. You know, I've got $20,000 worth of movie cameras and back behind my studio back here, but I use my phone for pretty much everything, including those. The fact is, technology is moving so quickly and it's condensing like this. We've got to be on our feet all the time to say no or yes. No, this is not going to be something that affects you today. Yes, it's something you should be aware of. Perhaps we should address it if it's potentially going to compromise the accessibility, integrity, or the confidentiality of your resources. But let's look at what we know right now. Is your seat belt on? You know, the door closed? Are you driving on the proper side of the road? I mean, let's do the fundamentals first. And so many businesses are moving so hungrily and aggressively in the marketplace to try and capture that market. Sometimes they forget to look over their shoulder to see who's either behind them or next to them in the vehicle. And that's where I think we can really do a better job of helping. All the smart guys, the control people, they're always going to be there. That's great. We need them desperately because they're a lot smarter than me. But I really believe it's all based on the pragmatics and the fundamentals of awareness, process first, and then looking at the controls on top of that. It doesn't not fail, but it does dramatically reduce the likelihood of a catastrophic event really causing long-term damage. Again, my soapbox. That's just the gospel according to Drew.
I like it. Eric, how about you?
I would totally agree, because a lot of times you're pointed to some of these things that could be like a black swan or something like this, because a lot of these vendors that will say, hey, look, we've got the newest thing that will prevent this. And they're pointing over at these other things and your attention's over there when you need to be looking at the most likely thing that things that could happen first. And so ensuring you've got that first ring completed and that you're always monitoring that. But then being aware of new things and being constant and current with technology and understanding some of the threats that are happening, looking at your logs and just saying, oh, this is new. Why are people doing this? Why would they want to do that? That's new. That's interesting. And then doing more research. And typically we have access into subscriptions with a community. So I know one of the really good ones with FinTech is FSISAC, being able to have that community and listen from other CISOs that are in that more closed community that can't really share it outside of the community, but within that community, they can. So understanding those type of things. So a lot of these subscription-based things that we're a part of, that keeps us really current to understand some of these newer things that are changing. But I totally agree with Drew on, you've got to make sure that your first things are covered. It's like the Occam's razor, where the most likely thing could occur, that probably is going to occur. And so you've got to not overlook that, I would say, is the answer to that.
This is fascinating. First of all, it sheds light on the complexity of what you folks deal with as a CISO, but also the simple matters that are a good reminder in order to deal with that complexity. Sometimes we make it much more difficult than it's intended.
Yeah, but we do that. Why, Maurice? It's because we can't get out of our own way sometimes. And in so doing, creating new challenges along the way.
Completely understandable. Drew, I have a feeling that we need to talk to you again. A lot of great experiences. And I love how this matches up with so many things that Eric tried to teach me as well. So if you wouldn't mind, we'd love to see if that'd be something you'd do.
Yeah. I would like to hear a part two also. So I understand, Drew, that you were part of SOX and the origins of that. Is that correct? Or is it a different framework?
So I was one of the about 24 guys that wrote, contributed to collaborating on establishing, it was originally called the Health Information Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA.
Yeah.
Which was born out of a guy named Ron Ross over at NIST, working with several banks, including Bank of America, which I was working on their security policy back in the 90s, and Senator Kennedy and Senator Kesselbaum were putting together a plan. And then from that, it led to some other consortia that I was part of, CVE consortia with MITRE, and standing up the CVE as a standard for enumerating vulnerabilities. And then some folks called me as part of the team when I was assigned to PCIS, the Partnership for Critical Infrastructure Security, and contributed to writing Section 404 of Sarbanes-Oxley. Now, of course, Sarbanes-Oxley was rewritten a zillion times, but I did have a hand in helping contribute to writing 404. And then when Common Criteria was all the rage back in the late 90s, they found that it was expensive and difficult and still very convoluted. And so from that came, obviously, the amalgamation that was and ultimately became the ISO 27K1 rule set. And so, yeah, I'm intimately involved with and having written books about, and, you know, I think I wrote one of the first how-to books on HIPAA. Again, my vocation is a writer, so it just happens to be in cybersecurity that I do this. But yeah, I'd love to talk about that. It's a lot of fun. And then, of course, Symantec. That's another story altogether. When we started Symantec, it was not what it originally, you know, started out to be. So it's kind of an interesting story there as well.
So part two is definitely going to be about this HIPAA and Sarbanes-Oxley. Then I'd love to go in Symantec because I know there's a lot of CISOs that are at that point where they're helping create companies as well.
Yeah.
So if that's all right, let's do that. And I'll reach out and schedule it. All right.
Yeah, let's do it. Look forward to it. Yeah. And Maurice, it's good to see you again as always.
Yeah. Great to meet you, Drew. This is awesome. We got to chat again.